This is Gorse Culture Podcast, the HR detective agency where we solve one piece of the people puzzle at a time. Helping you crack the HR code, here's Joe Gorse.
Hello and welcome to Gorse Culture Podcast, the HR detective agency. Our aim is to support you to find actionable solutions to your people puzzles. Now today, I've got a 2023 HR Most Influential Thinker and founder of HRC Online, James Dean. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to be talking to you today.
I'm just excited to be a detective for once. I've never been a detective. So, you know, this is fun for me.
Do you want to just take a couple of minutes to introduce yourself to the listeners?
As Joe said, I'm James Dean. I set up HRC Online, which is an online training company focused on HR, so CIPD specific qualifications. And I kind of fell into it about 15 years ago. I started working in the professional education sector, ended up from accountancy to HR training, which is a strange step. But then realised very quickly that HR is the gateway for everyone, really, to have a better learning experience and to get more out of their job and enhance their skills, and kind of led me to create my own online education company, which is HRC Online. So my background and skills, probably not your traditional HR, probably more L&D than HR if you were to categorise it, but specialising in professional sectors and online learning, which is how we've come together today, really.
So we came across each other on LinkedIn, which is, I think, it's a brilliant networking platform, and it really exposes individuals to others for learning, for exploring ideas, thought processes, and just understanding just how vast HR learning, OD really is.
I like LinkedIn at the moment because it's social media's got a tinge of outrage to it. Most platforms, you know, it's always the extreme version or the argument of, and LinkedIn is more about your career and benefiting your career and knowledge and people being open with sharing their knowledge, and just seems a little bit more curious than it is outraged, and that's kind of why I'm a big fan of it at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's good. I do. So today you're here to have a conversation with me to try and answer a people puzzle from a listener. So I'm going to read that out for you, James. Dear Gorse Culture Podcast, I'm hoping that you can offer some guidance on how I approach a conversation with my CEO about supporting qualifications in HR and other areas. I've worked in HR for 20 plus years and lead a team of 12. I didn't go to university, instead went straight into work as a junior in a HR team. About 10 years ago, I wanted to move into another role, but for someone with 10 years HR experience, it was an expectation that I have a CIPD qualification. I went down the experience route and was successful. I upgraded to support me to get a promotion, and now I have MCIPD. The majority of my team have been to university and achieved a bachelor's degree in HR or a related field, and are CIPD qualified, with some completing MS and achieving CIPD level 7. They're a great team, but studying HR isn't the same as working in HR. It's a big learning curve that some struggle to get to grips with, and to be perfectly honest, it can take a few years to get there. I have a line manager with years of experience in sales, and they really know how to get the best out of their team. They've been wanting to explore a career in HR for some time, but within this organisation you need to be qualified. The company stance is that they can take study leave to support self-funded development. I started to think that this isn't the only way into HR, and to be honest, if that had been a prerequisite when I was job hunting, I probably wouldn't have considered HR any further. I'd like to explore how we as an organisation can support our pipeline and grow our own talent. This is not something that we currently look at or have really explored, because we want to recruit the best talent. The sales manager has lots of people experience, and I think we could really benefit from a HR enthusiast.
Doesn't really seem that much of a puzzle to me in a really basic way, because you've got someone that's interested. Devolvement of HR duties are rife everywhere. You know, regardless if you're managing people, you are taking HR responsibilities and practice. I think the conversation with the CEO needs to be around what level of knowledge and experience do you want people to have, and how curious do you want your staff to be? Do you have a curious learning culture as a business, and is that something that you want to sort of embrace and invest in, or do you want people to just stay in their lane and boxes and create create a bit of silos. And if you have someone that's curious, they might step into this HR world and go, do you know what? No, I prefer being a sales manager and having my devolved responsibilities, because when I've got to sit there and I've got to go through a disciplinary and all the paperwork and the grievances and I've got to hear the, I can't have these difficult conversations. It doesn't feel natural to me. Now, so there's a really good opportunity in this for me, for the organisation to think about its culture and what sort of level of curiosity it wants within its culture of its leaders. Because it's middle managers that get compressed a lot of the time. You know, they get pressure from underneath, they get pressure from above to find the perfect solution to things. And a lot of the time they're accidental managers and they don't actually get any training to get ready for that world. So surely it's a good thing that they want to be better.
I think it's a good thing. I think and looking at your talent pipeline and growing your own is really where organisations can add value, the employee value as well. So from the employee's perspective, when they're going out and looking for a role, if they see an organisation who are willing to commit to an individual and help develop and grow them within their organisation, then that's really attractive when you're out there in the job market looking for a new role.
Yeah, and I think one of the things people often get confused about when they're thinking about professional qualifications is you collect this certificate and then you're going to take this certificate and you're going to get this job and you're going to leave this organisation and you're just going to walk away. And they look at the professional qualification as just this process to get this certificate. When actually, when you start to think about what, whether it's an apprenticeship, whether it's a CIPD qualification, whether it's an accountancy qualification, it's like saying, do you prefer to go out or stay in? I prefer to stay in. You're an introvert. Well, it's not as simple as that. Because that's why Myers-Briggs has 15 different questions asking the same thing in different ways so that you can actually define what your preference is. A professional qualification teaches you processes on repeat, which is written processes and research processes, so that you can find the best solution to a problem and you can write that, articulate that, and back up your theories and thoughts with evidence. That's what a professional qualification does. So it doesn't really matter whether it's in HR, accountancy, health and safety, or sales. If you're doing something that is professionally regulated, you've got a benchmark to show you what the standard is, and you're going through the process of repetition so that you can actually master a skill of research and evidence portrayal and critical evaluation. Now, isn't that going to benefit any business? And that's kind of where I think people get lost at times.
I do agree. So looking at the makeup of this team, for example. So this, we'll call them a HR lead. This HR lead worked in a HR department for a while and then went down the experience route. So they've got this CIPD qualification, MCIPD, which is chartered member. They can have those letters after their name and they have a certain level of acknowledgement from management of where they are placed within that profession. And then you've got people who go to university and go through a bachelor's degree and then a master's to get the same level of qualification. And then you have those who go down your route and work and learn at the same time. And that's what I did. I did exactly that. I worked and I self-funded and I went through that. So I think my experience is probably a little bit like the university experience in that you have to do essays and you have to make sure that you put your projects in and it's all marked and you have to reach a certain level of understanding and be able to articulate that in a certain way to be able to pass each phase. Now, I haven't done the experience route, so I'm not really too knowledgeable on that, but there won't be the same level of personal development as there are in going through a qualification of learning and evaluation that there is in the it is self-assessment, isn't it?
And it's something CIPD control themselves, so it's not something we as centres ever really get involved in. But the best way that you can think about it is if the qualification's got so many defined learning outcomes. So it may be we want to see that you've implemented a wellbeing initiative in work. We want to see how you've analysed and controlled people management data to make data-driven decision-making. And the experiential assessment will say, pull together projects that you've been involved in and managed that cover these learning outcomes, which are the same learning outcomes in the qualification. Put together a portfolio of evidence about what you did, how you approached it, how it's all gone, and then you will have a professional discussion with a specialist, someone, you know, FCIPD status, chartered status, and they will quiz you on what you did, how you did it, and how you went around it in a professional discussion. Now, if you pass that professional discussion and all the evidence that's put together matches all the required learning outcomes, we will give you the qualification because you have qualified by experience. And it's a big job for someone to do, but if someone has, as this person has all that experience over 10 years, then it's the right thing to do because you know the answers to the questions. So why go through a process of writing something really short when you could actually add quite a lot of value to it in the professional way? I think it's sometimes about finding the most appropriate mean to your end, but like a degree at university, for example, that's the big dissertation's a research paper, and that's great for really looking into a subject area. What CIPD qualifications do is they do that short repetition training, so they use the same, so it's 15 little questions of about 375 words each for 7 different units, and they do short repetition training so that you get in the positive habits of researching and using CIPD resources as opposed to academic resources to seek answers. So it's all about, if you think about it, it's all about what training do you need. Do you need that period of reflection to go, I am very experienced? Do you need that big piece of research to do it, or do you need a little repetition training? And that's kind of where it fits in with this, and it's the same for apprenticeships. That's the short repetition training on repeat with a coach, a little bit more one-to-one coaching. And so organizations should be making best use of all of it, really, to give people the biggest chance to identify what gives them the most motivation. And it doesn't mean that you can't work in sales and study HR, because you're learning a process. You're not learning, you're just using HR as the knowledge base for that process, so to speak.
Looking at this letter, I don't think the organisation does any kind of professional development for, and I actually don't think that they, it doesn't look like the way they're talking that they do graduate programmes either, which is also another good route to support recently graduated new employees. How big a commitment is it for the organisation though? So if I was a CEO of an organisation, I'd be thinking about, okay, I can see the value of professional qualifications for my staff, and I can see the value of doing that through an apprenticeship scheme as well. Good, it's a big cost for me. One of the things that could happen, I was talking to a client only yesterday, they have apprentices, but once they're fully qualified, they end up leaving and going to another organisation. So all that time and commitment and development that has been put into that individual to get them to a qualified status has then resulted in them having to go out and find either somebody else who's qualified, part qualified, or a new apprentice to cover that gap. So is there a huge risk for organisations to invest in developing their staff in this way, in professional qualifications, or is it? Am I going down a different route, and that's just an isolated example?
Why are they leaving after they've got this qualification? What is the organisation doing to retain these people? Now, it may be that there's no opportunities for these people, and they're progressing their careers. Now, isn't that a great thing that you as an organisation are helping people progress their career because you don't have something that they would be better suited for? Is it that you're not paying them enough? If you're trying to create a curious culture, well, think of all these people that helped this person studying the apprenticeship, how invested they are in their development and stuff like that, what they get from it, not just from them gaining the qualification, but they're reinforcing their learning, their knowledge, that, you know, that you go into that mentor, you go into that thing, you're checking your understanding, you're challenging yourself, you're being curious and not just going through the motions. So the first question is, well, why are you losing them? Why are they leaving after they're qualified? What do you do as an organisation to retain your talent? Is there opportunity for them to retain? What is the path? And if you don't know the path, well, that is probably the answer as to why people are leaving. Now, giving people opportunities to better themselves seems sensible, doesn't it? You want people to feel like there is a fair exchange for discretionary effort for learning or for earning. I saw it on LinkedIn recently, which is you either learn or you earn, ideally both, but never none. So what are you doing to ensure that you improve your workplace and the skills within your workplace? I think their problem is probably the post-qualification approach than it is investing in staff, because that investment in staff will be benefiting so many people, as frustrated as they probably are that everyone leaves. There's so many rich conversations that come from it.
So what do you think and the organisations for this CEO, what do you think that they would have to consider to make sure that they have the right framework in place to support the learning process for staff who want to continue to learn professionally, whether it's for the role they're doing or perhaps to enrich their role or look at an alternate role in the organisation, but also the mentors and the managers who are guiding them and supporting them through that process? To close that loop, I suppose, what kind of things do they need to put in place to make sure that it is a rich process, but it's also sustainable?
We did, so we had this same problem for a previous company that I was working in, and what we did is we started at the top. So we started with the there was three of us as directors, and we went, right, who's going to replace us? And we picked, you know, who's ready to replace us, and is there enough people to replace us? And then we went to the SMT, so the senior management team, and went, who's going to replace them? Who are we preparing to replace these people? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What do they want to help people? How do we cross this? And then we went below and we did, well, who's going to replace these people? How do we prepare for the situation where someone may leave, something personal might happen, someone may go on maternity? How do we ensure that there is succession planning in place to keep the business functioning at optimal at all times, giving people learning opportunities, mentoring opportunities, and growth opportunities? Now, when we did this, obviously there was going to be a situation where at some point someone would be ready for the next step, but the person above them wasn't going to leave. But it's okay, because one, we understood and we helped them get there and they've bettered their career. Two, we've also planned for the people who are ready to step up and take their career. So we're always backfilling up, and we have a succession plan in place to know that the investment is all about driving the organisation forward. And if everyone is learning and everyone is improving and everyone's doing things better, well, that will also create opportunities and projects, which then creates a completely new succession planning structure. So it's all to do for me with that, consistently thinking about succession planning. Who's going to replace me? What skills do they need? How can I help them get there? How can we help them get there? How do we invest to ensure that that's there? Because these graduates that they're taking on with the HR degrees, motivated, ready, but as they put in the letter, they don't have the practical experience. They don't have that situational awareness. They don't, you know, you can get a degree in HR, but until you're stood in front of a room of people telling them that there's going to be redundancies and many of them are about to lose their job, you don't know if you're ready for that. And you're not going to be ready for it until you've at least done it two or three times. It takes a while. Or going through a grievance where two people hate each other and they've got two sides of the organisation fighting against each other, and you've got to be that Switzerland to not only neutralise the conflict but calm everyone else down. You're never going to be able to do that until you've done it. There is no book you can read that will prep you for it and how you will feel in that moment.
No, it's all learning, isn't it? And with each example, it adds more to your toolbox, and you get learning from different examples and different ways to then use as you go forward to improve yourself as a continuing learner and improve yourself as a tool within these situations.
I completely agree. And it all comes down to back to succession planning for me. Like, there's so many people and there's so many managers you see who don't want to give people an opportunity because, you know, what if they do better than me? Well, that's great. If they're doing better than me, then that's great. The future's great. Look at all this. There's more knowledge, there's more skills, there's more opportunity. The business is performing better. HR's role is to ensure business is in strong health. And the CEO's role is to ensure the business is performing well. Now, if you recruit somebody, that costs 10% of a salary, 10 to 20% of a salary. If you put someone on a training contract and you've got them, we will pay for your training for X, and if you leave after it for the next 2 years, you've got to pay us back. Or the next year, you've got to pay us back. You're making investments, but you're also getting the rewards of those investments, and everyone knows what they sign up for. So, yeah, I think it's just about culture then. It's the organisational culture of, I want my team to do better than me. I want the person below me to surpass where I've got to. as opposed to I'm going to keep these people in play in this apprenticeship position at this apprenticeship wage, and I'm going to make the best use of this cheap labour that I can. And I think it comes down to the organisational's culture and integrity in terms of what they want to do. And if they are investing in apprenticeships, this is a great thing, and using their apprenticeship levy for that. But next.
Yeah, I've seen quite a lot of examples of where managers have got really high performing teams because they're motivated, they're in a good place, but the managers are keeping them that way because they've got a high team and they're hitting all the KPIs and they're delivering and they're on their objectives. So the people within are in a good place for a while because they're getting all of that praise and that feedback, but it's not sustainable. You can't keep a team like that. You need to, I agree with you completely, you need to look at how you're going to support them to move forwards on their own career journey and bring somebody else in as well. It's almost like the old marionettes and how you do it, what kind of support do you give them? Do you do it all in one big step? We've got our middle managers and they all move up together, or do we slot them in so we've got some support for the new starters coming in as well? I think one of the things that occurs to me is those new graduates, when they come in and they start to get their experience, that can take a few years after they've qualified to build up their own toolbox and get some experience to support them in continuing in their career. But what about further development? So what kind of things should HR professionals be looking at to continue their own development so that they continue to be able to add value to their team, their managers, who they support in the organisation?
This is the thing, because things don't have to be a qualification. It's just that teaches you a process. But learning should never stop and curiosity should never stop. So you've got your experience down. Well, that's great. That's where mentoring others comes in. That's where supporting other people trying to come through. That's where spending time with different parts of the business is important. I always think when people come through HR graduate, you know, a degree, and you go through a graduate program, if the graduate program's got rotations in it where you're going and working with different departments and you're working with different people, that's where it really has benefit, because you get to see how the component parts function as a whole. And I would always recommend to a HR person that they go just into different departments and ask the question, how can we help you do better? Because there is no business is going to, everything's perfect. If that business exists, I've never seen it. So just go into different, how can we help you do better? What do we need to do to cut down sort of barriers and stuff like that? How can we help? And if you're coming from a place of I'm trying to help other departments and other businesses, one, you'll learn about their department, you'll learn about the intricacies, you'll learn about the things that work well, the things that don't work well, and you'll see how it connects together. And if you can understand how a business connects together as a whole, then you're in a lot better position. So I would always go, come from uni, learn about HR, learn about how you fit into this singular direction, then spread and understand how what HR does spreads against an entire organization, because that is the only way you can really impact the culture of an organization, by knowing if we change the IT system here, it will impact the finance team over here, and impact the sales team over there, but it will have a negative impact on customer services. And because we know that, I will speak to customer services first and I will make sure they understand the collective benefit so that we all can move forward. And I think that's a big mistake HR make. They stay in their little HR office, learning about going to CIPD conferences or branch meetings and talking about well-being initiatives and stuff like that, but they're not experiencing their business. Like, what does a salesperson do on the phone call? What does a customer services person, what does the finance team do? How does it all connect together? And knowing their pain points actually allows you to connect into the business more deeply than it would just going on another course to look at AI analytics for HR.
I think that's a great point. Absolutely great point. I worked in an organisation and had two HR graduates each rotation, and they spent time in operational HR and then they spent time in organisational development. Two totally polar opposites of the HR spectrum. One of them had conversations afterwards with both of the heads of about whether they would like to apply for a role in their departments, and the individual was conflicted because they were completely different the same organisation, but completely different teams, different cultures within the organisation, different ways of working, different thought process. Now, when it came, so a conversation that I had with this graduate was, well, what is it that you want to do? What's the end result for you? Where is your passion? Is it that direct working within operations to support the managers through that? Or is it within organisational development and looking at the wider picture, the bigger picture, and going and looking at those programmes of work? She then went to work in HR ops because that's where her passion was. It was supporting her services. And she's doing absolutely amazing. She's doing brilliantly. Within that same organisation, some of the senior managers often talked about that rotation and how valuable would it be to be able to spend a week. You're not going to get a huge insight, but you are going to get a really good insight into other HR departments. So this is a massive organisation. So going into the analytics team, going into the workforce team, going into organisational development, into the learning, into ops, and then outside into to other aspects as well, because everything has an impact. Accounts, for example, has a huge impact. They hold the budget for the next 12 months. So understanding what the constraints are for them as well is really, really valuable.
And we both know Sharon Green, she's a professional interim HR consultant. And she shared a story with me the other week where she went into an organisation and she was direct level HR, just coming in for an interim. And she asked all the departments for their strategy, and she asked the marketing director, you know, can you send me the marketing plan? And the hesitance, well, why do you want my marketing plan? What do you want to know? Why do you want to know how it, well, like, it's mine, it's my plan, why do you want to know? Are you going to critique it or something? And the motivation for it is to actually be able to understand how we portray ourselves to our customers, how we portray ourselves internally, how we write, how we speak, how we communicate, so that there can be a level of consistency, so that everyone can feel part of what the customers feel. But that protectionism at times, that is the big barrier. And getting people comfortable with being uncomfortable and being quizzed and being probed and being that's what a learning culture is, in terms of going, well, just open up, just tell them what it is, because no singular person knows all the answers. It's just not a chance. And one person can know one bit of information, and you know 99% of the other information. Doesn't mean they're better at your job than you, just means that they've got one piece of information that's valuable to make that business better.
Goes back to having people around you who think differently, who have a team who know more about a certain aspect than you do, and help them grow and progress in that area, or help them progress and widen their skill set and knowledge in another area where you know you have more knowledge. I think there is a lot. So that marketing manager, I'm sure there's a story there of why they're so defensive, but there is a lot of that as well. It's I think a little bit of nervousness, as you say, are you going to critique this? This is my baby, I've developed it, and this is how I'm going to grow this team. But there needs to be that interdepartment collaboration, not only to understand what the tone of the organisation is, but how can we help you? What can we do to support you to achieve your marketing plan? And it works throughout the organisation like that, through collaboration. It's very closed comment and defensive.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to the puzzle question, you know, the HR manager's going straight to the CEO, or what do they need to do to convince them? Well, let's do some focus groups. Let's do some communication. Let's find out what skills people have that we don't know about. Because there'll be people with qualifications and interests and hobbies and structures and learning in stuff that they probably haven't connected. Let me speak to all these different departments, find out what people are curious about, find out how people want to improve, find out how they think they can add more value to this business. Then let's compile it all together and speak to the CEO about, there's an opportunity here, because this is all the information we found. This is everything that we want to know, and this is how we want to go forward with it. I remember I worked for a training company, and there was a guy joined as a junior tutor on accountancy, but he'd got a master's in banking from Oxford, which was paid for by Merrill Lynch and stuff like that at the time. But he'd left that life. He wanted to get into teaching. they had no idea until they did that, what skills do you have? And then when they found it was like, well, we're actually developing banking, professional banking qualifications, and we need this guy in. And he solved so many problems for the business just because they were curious about their staff and what they were interested in, and spent some time doing focus groups and asking questions. They could have gone for a, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of candidate, and they had someone on, peanuts in comparison with this massive background, that actually was really up for it, and they saved a fortune just from being curious and asking questions. And it sounds like this puzzle's very much like that. Just be curious and find out what people want, because it's not Pizza Friday. They want to, you know, they work so that they can have a life, and they want to improve at their job, they want to improve at life, and they want to sort of de-stress as many things as they possibly can, and learning plays a critical part in that for me.
It does. I think for me, one of the valuable things about professional qualifications through organisations like yours is it supports women and people in the workplace who are going through family issues, whether it's caring, whether it's pregnancy, maternity leave. The opportunities for progression during those periods are limited because they're not able to take the whole self to work. They're not able to explore some of the opportunities in the organisation, and particularly part-time workers as well. Going through a professional course like this can then support them. They may not want to go for another job now, but looking at the future. And I think I say women, and I think that's probably because of it's just indoctrined in there, and it's not just women. There are lots of people. So I know a lot of men workers are carers for their family or their spouses or children. So it does affect a wide range. But I think historically, and there are lots of research figures out there, that women are not promoting or progressing as much. In HR, not true, because I think there's more women in HR than there are men. But certainly within the professional field and professional qualifications, this would really support that demographic to be able to progress.
Yeah, there's a big problem that we need to overcome, and we need to consistently talk about, is women will not apply for a job until they've ticked off everything on the job description. Men will just throw in an application, hope for the best. There's stats around that sort of prove it. And I see it from, on a really basic level, from an assessment perspective. You know, the majority of female candidates will not submit their assessment until they feel it's in perfect working order and everything's in place. I've had many men just throw in their assessment, missing three or four questions, knowing they're going to fail. They just want to know if they've got the original lot right, and then they can finish on the last couple. And it's that element where, and I don't know how we solve it, and we solve it probably by keep speaking about it, but there's an element where a lot of females do not feel like they can apply for the next job up until they've got all the experience and everything ticked off. You're never going to be able to do that unless you apply for the next job up. And they find themselves in this weird stuck situation where they're like, well, I'm not good enough for that next job because I've not worked, I've not got this or that or the other. And you're not going to unless you take that. You know, what's the point in doing a job if there's no learning in the job? What's the point in applying for a job if you're not going to expand your skills? And there's a real lack of self-confidence is probably the nicest way that I can put it in a lot of things that we see, which is one of the perks of professional qualifications, because a lot of people start very anxious and get very confident towards the end because they're following the process. They know what they do. They know how to research. They know how to formulate their answers. They know how to argue their point. And they've got positive feedback from, obviously, the months of studying. But that's the problem for me. It's they're stopping themselves a lot of the time, and then there's the pay variance, and then I saw a stat which is 71% of women from having a child either get demoted or leave within the first 3 years of coming back from mat leave, which is an atrocious bit of data. And it was a maternity charity that had done that research, so I'm assuming it's pretty accurate. And CIPD did some further research on it as well. So we need to create that opportunity where we're in a society now where both people need to work. So we need to create opportunities so that both people can work. And that's where hybrid working, flexible working and everything, and study and learning plays a critical part. And we don't have it right yet, but at least people are making strides.
Yeah, I think it's about looking at it in different ways. How can we support this rather than, well, you work part-time so you can't go for that promotion? Well, how can we look at it in a different way? It's difficult to get around that. It's mindset thinking, really, isn't it, for organisations, changing the whole mindset of how we're going to move forward. I think that's a whole different conversation there, James.
Well, yeah, we always talk about going up the ladder. We never talk about taking a couple of steps down the ladder until someone's, you know, in their 60s or something like that, when actually there's probably a period in your life where things are a bit crazy and you want to take a couple of steps down. But definitely a different subject for a different time.
It is, definitely. So I think really, For this head of HR, I'm going to call them, the next steps are talking to the workforce, some focus groups, having some of those valuable, rich conversations about what is it that you want. If we had an offer, what would that look like for you? How could you benefit? But then, again, looking at it in a different way, of where could you add value to the organisation elsewhere now? What kind of skills do you have? Or looking again at project work. If we have projects, what kind of project would you like to do? Where does your skill set go? Would you like to put a business case forward and we can support that? Or what skills would you need us to provide you with and help you with to be able to do something like that to support your role or elsewhere in the organisation? I think that conversation with the CEO or the senior leadership team is about thinking differently and thinking wider about how we can keep that talent pipeline moving, like the example you gave of your organisation.
Yeah, it's all going to the CEO and saying, I want to put a succession plan in place and I want to think about what skills people don't have so that the organisation can stay in maximum health should not be a hard conversation to have. I mean, it may be because you're talking about money, but that's what you're trying to find what people are interested in, what the business needs, and match the two together. And if you can do that well, perfect, isn't it?
It is. Let's aim for perfect. But I think it's a culture of the organisation. What does that culture look like? This is going to have to be adapted to fit that, to fit the conversations of the organisation. I would be really interested to find out how that conversation goes and the kind of work they get, because I'm sure with doing some focus groups and open conversations, it will bring out a lot of things that they wouldn't have previously considered. It might not be just about professional development. There might be other things as well to consider. But James, are there any nuggets of information, a little gold mine that you would like to share with this writer or the listeners?
I would. The main thing I always say to anyone is, even if you get a no, it's not a no never. It's always a no, not right now. The CEO will be looking at it from a business health perspective probably, and they're coming at it from their angle. So try to think about it from their perspective, even if they don't fully share it. But never take something as a no, never. Just take it as a no, not right now. And when the business, you know, if the business is in great health, great. Well, why not right now? If the business is in bad health, well, maybe it's not right now, but let's plan for the future and stuff like that. A no is never a no. A no is always a not yet, or I'm not ready, or something like that. And just don't give up on these things if you think it will benefit the business as a whole. HR need to become a lot more persistent in these things. So it's not a no never, it's a no not right now, and then try again and try again and try again if you think it's the right thing to do.
It could sometimes just be about reframing. How do you get that buy-in of the senior leadership team and the CEO to move forward with this succession planning, because the benefits really outweigh anything else. James, thank you very much for being a HR detective today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you very much for listening. As James, please continue to explore all opportunities. And if you've learnt anything from this, then please do share. But until next time, thank you very much for listening.
That was Gorse Culture Podcast. If you find the conversation interesting, please follow or subscribe on your podcast app. For show notes, resources, and to see more about the contributors, visit gorseculturepod.com. That's gorseculturepod.com.